don't have to trust the virtual reality, but you can enjoy both. You can enjoy what is, and you can enjoy what you create. Even though you know your story isn't true, you can create the most beautiful story, and you can guide your life through that story. You can create your personal heaven and live in that heaven. And if you can understand other people's stories, and they can understand yours, then together you can create the most beautiful dream. But first you need to unlearn a lot. And the fifth agreement is another perfect tool for that. Wherever you go around the world, you'll hear all kinds of opinions and stories from other people. You'll find great storytellers wanting to tell you what you should do with your life. You should do this, you should do that, you should do whatever. Don't believe them. Be skeptical, but learn to listen, and then make your choices. Be responsible for every choice you make in your life. This is your life. It's nobody else's life. And you'll find that it's nobody else's business what you do with your life. For centuries, there have been people who claim to know the will of God and who go around the world preaching goodness and rightness and condemning everybody. For centuries, there have been prophets who predicted big catastrophes in the world. Not that long ago, there were people who predicted that in the year 2000, all the computers would fail and society as we know it would disappear. Some people thought that we would return to the time of the caveman. The day arrived, we celebrated the new century, the new year, and what happened? Nothing happened. Thousands of years ago, just like today, there were prophets who were waiting for the end of the world. At that time, a great master said, "There will be many false prophets who claim to be speaking the word of God. Don't believe." You see, the fifth agreement is not really new. Be skeptical, but learn to listen. Chapter 9, The Dream of the First Attention. This brings me to the story about Adam and Eve in paradise. Adam and Eve represent all humans, and God told us that we could eat whatever we wanted except for the fruit of the tree of knowledge. The day that we eat the fruit of this tree, we would die. Well, we ate it, and we died. Of course, this is just a story. But the important thing is the meaning of the story. Why do we die when we eat the fruit of this tree? Because the real name for the tree of knowledge is the tree of death. The other tree in paradise is the tree of life. Life is truth, and the truth just is, without words or symbols. The tree of knowledge is just a reflection of the tree of life. We already know that knowledge is created with symbols, and that symbols aren't real. When we eat the fruit of the tree of knowledge, the symbols become a virtual reality that talks to us as the voice of knowledge, and we live in that reality believing that it's real, which means without awareness, of course. It's obvious that humans ate the fruit of the tree of death. From my point of view, there are billions of humans walking around in this world who are dead, but they don't know they're dead. Yes, their bodies are alive, but they are dreaming without any awareness that they are dreaming. And this is what the Toltec call the dream of the first attention. The dream of the first attention is the dream that we create by using our attention for the very first time. This is what I also call the ordinary dream of the humans. Or we can say that it's the dream of the victims, because we are victims of all the symbols that we create. We're victims of all the voices in our head. We're victims of all the superstitions and distortions in our knowledge. In the dream of the victims, where most people live, we are victimized by our religion, by our government, by our entire way of thinking and believing. When we are children, we cannot defend ourselves against all the lies that come with the whole tree of knowledge. As we said before, our parents, schools, religion, and our entire society hook our attention and introduce us to their opinions and beliefs. We believe in the religion that we believe in because our parents believe in that religion, because they take us to church or another place of worship, and we learn to believe everything we are told. The adults who take care of us tell us their stories, and we go to school and we hear more stories. We learn the story of our country. We learn about all the heroes, all the wars, all the human suffering. The adults prepare us to be a part of our society, and I can say without a doubt that it's a society ruled completely by lies. We learn to live in the same dream they live in. Our faith gets trapped in the structure of that dream, and that dream becomes normal for us. But I don't believe that they did this with any bad intention. The adults can only teach us what they know. They cannot teach us what they don't know. What they know is what they learned in their whole lives. It's what they believed in their whole lives. You can be sure that your parents did the best they could for you at the time. If they didn't do better, it's because they didn't know any better. You can bet that they had all kinds of judgments about themselves, and that everybody else was judging them too. They lived in the dream of the first attention, the underworld, the dream that we call Hades or hell. They were dead. Of course, all these symbols are not exactly the truth. The truth is behind the symbols. It's in the intent or the meaning of the symbols. When religions describe the dream of hell, they say it's a place where we burn, a place where we are judged, a place of eternal punishment. Well, that description of hell is the ordinary dream of the humans. That very same thing is happening in the human mind. The judgment, the guilt, the punishment, and the emotions generated by fear that feel like a fire burning inside us. Fear is king of the underworld, and it rules our world by creating the distortions in our knowledge. Fear creates the whole world of injustice and emotional drama, the whole nightmare that billions of people are living in. And what is the biggest fear in this world? Fear of the truth. Humans are afraid of the truth because we have learned to believe so many lies. Of course, we're also afraid of the lies we believe. Truth or fiction, just having knowledge makes us feel safe. But then we suffer because we believe what we know, and almost everything we know isn't true. It's just a point of view, but we believe it, and we deliver the same distorted messages to our own children. The whole chain continues, and the history of the humans repeats itself again and again and again. Long ago, wise people compared the dream of the first attention to a marketplace where thousands of people are talking at the same time and nobody is really listening. The Toltec called this a mitote, which is a Nahuatl word meaning extreme gossip. In that mitote, we use the word against ourselves, and when we relate with other people, we use the word against them. Every human is a magician. And in the interaction between the magicians, there are spells being cast everywhere. How? By misusing the word. By taking everything personally. By distorting everything we perceive with assumptions. By gossiping and spreading emotional poison with the word. Humans cast spells mainly upon the people we love the most. And the more authority we have, the more powerful the spells. Authority is the power that a human has to control other humans, to make them obey. You can see yourself as a child being afraid of authority. You can also see adults being afraid of authority. Words spoken with authority become a powerful spell that affects other humans. Why? Because we believe those words. If we understand the power of symbology, we can see where the symbols are taking us. We can see it by the way we behave, by the interaction we have with everybody, but mainly with ourselves. We become possessed by an idea, by a belief, by a story. Sometimes it's anger that possesses us. Sometimes it's jealousy that possesses us. Sometimes it's love that possesses us. The symbols are competing for control of our attention, and in one way or another they're changing all the time. They're taking turns possessing us. There are thousands of symbols that want to take their place in our head and control us. As we said before, all those symbols are alive, and that life comes from us because we believe. The symbols are talking and talking inside our head. They never stop. It's just as if we have a narrator in our head telling us everything that is happening around us, as if we're not aware that we're perceiving it. And now the sun is going down. That's good. I'm hot. Look, there are trees over there. What's that person doing? I wonder what he's thinking. The voice of knowledge wants to know what everything means. It can hardly wait to interpret everything that happens in our lives. It's telling us what to do, when to do it, where to do it, how to do it. It's reminding us all the time what we believe about ourselves, what we don't believe about ourselves. It's telling us everything that we're not. It's asking us why we can't be the way we should be. In the dream of the first attention, the world we live in is just like a reality show, hosted by the voice of knowledge. And for sure, we're always going to be right and everyone else is going to be wrong, because we use everything that we know to justify everything in our show. What a reality show. Rated number one. We create every character in that story, and whatever we believe about every one of them is not the truth, and it never was the truth. With a whole tree of knowledge living in our head, we no longer perceive the truth. We only perceive our own knowledge. We only perceive lies. When we only perceive lies, our attention becomes trapped in the dream of hell. We no longer perceive the reality of heaven all around us. And this is how humans fell from paradise. In the story of Adam and Eve, we had a great exchange with a snake who lived in the tree of knowledge. That snake was a fallen angel who delivered distorted messages. He was the prince of lies, and we were innocent. The snake said to us, "Do you want to be like God?" A simple question, but can you see the trick? If we had said, "No, thank you, I'm already God," we would still be living in paradise. But we answered, "Yes, I want to be like God." We didn't notice the lie. We bit the fruit. We swallowed the lie. And we died. What makes us bite the apple without noticing the lie is the doubt. Before we have the doubt, we don't even know. The truth is there and we just live it. Once we ingest the lie, we no longer believe that we are God. And this is when we start to search for God. Next, we believe that we have to create a temple to find God. We need a place to worship God. We have to sacrifice everything to reach God. We have to create pain in ourselves and offer our pain to God. Very soon, we have a big temple with thousands of people believing that they are not God. Of course, we need to give God a name, and the result is the creation of religion. We create the god of thunder, the god of war, the goddess of love, and we called them Zeus, Mars, and Aphrodite. There were thousands, maybe millions of people who believed in these gods and worshipped these gods. They offered their lives as a sacrifice to these gods. They even killed their own children as an offering to these gods because they believed these gods were the truth. But were they? As you can see, the first lie that we believe is, "I am not God." From this lie comes another lie, and then another, and then another, and we believe and believe and believe. Very soon, there are so many lies that it's overwhelming, and we forget our own divinity. We see the beauty and perfection of God, and we want to be like God. We want to be that image of perfection, and we search and search for perfection. Humans are storytellers. And we tell our children stories about a God who is perfect, about a God who judges us and punishes us when we misbehave. We tell them about a Santa Claus who rewards little children who are good, or more like God. These messages are distorted. The kind of God who plays with justice doesn't exist. Santa Claus doesn't exist. All that knowledge in our head isn't real. You see, when we talk to the snake in the tree of knowledge, we talk to a distorted reflection of ourselves. That snake in the tree of knowledge is who we are really so afraid of. We're afraid of our own reflection. Isn't that silly? Imagine looking at a reflection of yourself in the mirror. The reflection appears to be an exact copy of what is real, but the image in the mirror is the opposite of what's real. Your right hand is your left hand in the mirror. The truth is always distorted by the reflection. When we're children, the mirrors around us hook our attention so we can see them, and what we see are distorted images of ourselves. According to their mood, according to the moment when those mirrors are reflecting to us, according to whatever belief system they're using to justify their perceptions. The humans around us tell us what they believe we are. But there isn't a clear mirror to reflect what we really are. All the mirrors are completely distorted. They project what they believe onto us, and almost everything they believe is a lie. We believe it or we don't believe it. When we're children, we are innocent and we believe almost everything. We put our faith in lies. We give them life. We give them power. And soon those lies are ruling our lives. The story of the Prince of Lies is just a story, but it's a beautiful story, made with symbols that we can understand and then draw conclusions. I think its meaning is clear. Once we start dreaming that we are not God, the whole nightmare begins. We fall from paradise and go directly to the underworld, to what we call hell. We begin to search for God. We begin to search for our self, because the tree of knowledge is living our life, and our authentic self is dead. And this reminds me of another story about Jesus the Christ, who was walking with his disciples when he saw a man who was worthy of his teachings. He went to the man and said, "Come and join me." The man replied, "I will come, but my father just died. I have to bury him, and then I will follow you." And Jesus told him, "Let the dead bury the dead. You are alive. Come with me." If you understand the story, it's easy to see that you are dead when you are not awake, when you are not aware of what you are. You are truth. You are life. You are love. But in the process of domestication, the outside dream, the dream of the planet, hooks your attention and feeds you all of your beliefs. Little by little, you become a copy of the outside dream. You copy everything you learn from everybody and everything around you. You copy not just beliefs, but behavior, which means you copy not just what people say, but what they do. You perceive the emotional state of the people around you, and you even copy that. You are not who you really are because you've been possessed by that distorted image of you. And this may be a little difficult to understand, but all this time, it has been you who possesses you. What is possessing you is the virtual you. It's what you think you are. It's what you believe you are. And that image of yourself becomes extremely powerful. All these years of practice have made you a master of pretending to be what you think you are. And that distorted image of yourself is really your grave. Because the real you is not the one who is living your life. And who is living your life? Is it the real you who creates all the drama and suffering in your life? Is it the real you who says life is a valley of tears and we come here to suffer? Is it the real you who judges yourself and punishes yourself and invites other people to punish you too? Is it the real you who abuses your body? Is it the real you who doesn't even like yourself? Is it really the real you who's dreaming all that? No, it's not the real you. You are dead, and that's the truth. And what is the key to coming back to life? Awareness. When you recover awareness, you resurrect and come back to life. In the Christian tradition, the resurrection day is when the Christ comes back from the dead and shows his divinity to the world. That's why you were here, to come back from the dead and reclaim your own divinity. It's time to come back from the world of illusion, the world of lies, and return to your own truth, to your own authenticity. It's time to unlearn the lies and become the real you. And in order to do that, you need to come back to life, which is truth. Awareness is the key to coming back to life, and it's one of the main masteries of the Toltec. Awareness takes you out of the dream of the first attention into the dream of the second attention, where you rebel against all the lies that are ruling your head. You rebel, and the whole dream starts changing. Chapter 10, The Dream of the Second Attention. The first time that we learn how to dream, there are many things that we don't like, that we're against, but we just accept the dream as it is. Then, for whatever reason, we become aware that we don't like the way we are living our lives. We become aware of what we are dreaming, and we don't want that dream. Now we try to use the attention a second time to change our dream, to create a second dream. This is what the Toltec call the dream of the second attention, or the dream of the warriors, because now we declare a war against all the lies in our knowledge. In the dream of the second attention, we begin to doubt. Maybe everything I learned is not the truth. We begin to challenge what we believe. We start to question all the opinions that we learned. We know there's something in our head that makes us do many things that perhaps we don't want to do, something that has complete control of our mind, and we don't like it. And because we don't like it, at a certain point, we begin to rebel. In that rebellion, we try to recover our authenticity, what I call the integrity of the self, or the totality of what we are. In the dream of the first attention, the authentic self has no chance. It's a complete victim. We don't rebel. We don't even try. But now we no longer want to be the victim, and we try to change our world. We try to recover our personal freedom, the freedom to be who we really are, the freedom to do what we really want to do. The world of the warriors is the world of trying. We try to change the world that we don't like, and we keep trying and trying and trying, and the war looks endless. In the dream of the warriors, we are in a war. But that war is not against other people. It has nothing to do with the outside dream. The whole thing is happening inside our mind. It's a war against the part of our mind that makes all the choices that guide us into our personal hell. It's a war between the authentic self and what we call the tyrant, the big judge, the book of law, the belief system. It's a war between ideas, between opinions, between beliefs. I also call it the war of the gods, because all these ideas fight for dominion of the human mind, and just like the gods of antiquity, they claim a human sacrifice. Yes, the human sacrifice we offer to the gods is still happening, even if we claim that we don't believe in human sacrifice anymore. Of course, we change the names of the gods. We change the meaning of all those symbols that we call God. Perhaps we no longer believe in Apollo. We no longer believe in Zeus. We no longer believe in Osiris. But we believe in justice. We believe in liberty. We believe in democracy. These are the names of the new gods. We give our power to these symbols. We take them to the realm of the gods, and we sacrifice our lives in the name of these gods. Human sacrifice is happening all the time, all around the world, and we can see the result. We see violence, we see crime, we see jails full of people, we see war, we see the dream of hell in humanity, because we believe in so many superstitions and distortions in our knowledge. Humans create wars, and we send our young to be sacrificed in those wars. Many times they don't even know what they're fighting for. We see a war of gangs in any large city. Young people sacrifice themselves and kill one another in the name of pride, in the name of profit, in the name of whatever god they believe in. They fight for their pride. They fight for control of a piece of land. They fight for a symbol that's in their heads and on their jackets, and they sacrifice themselves. From the smallest barrio to the largest nations around the planet, we see groups of people fighting and defending their gods for something that doesn't exist. The war is raging inside their heads. But the problem is that they send the war outside of themselves and kill one another. Perhaps we no longer believe in human sacrifice, but right now there are people who say, I will be the one who sacrifices. Give me a gun and I will kill as many people as I can before they kill me. And this is not a judgment. It's just the way it is. I will not say that human sacrifice is wrong. It just exists. And we cannot deny that it exists because we see it every day in many different cultures around the world. We see it, and we also participate in it. If someone makes a mistake and is caught breaking a rule, what do we do? Let's crucify him. Let's judge him. Let's gossip about him. That's another form of human sacrifice. Yes, there are rules, and maybe it's the biggest sin to go against those rules. And maybe some of those rules are completely unnatural. But we create the rules. We agree to live by those rules. And we will follow those rules until we no longer need them. And right now, we need them. Humans believe in so many lies that even the smallest thing becomes a big demon that makes us suffer. Usually it's just a judgment, and mainly it's a self-judgment. Poor me, those rules until we no longer need them. And right now, we need them. Humans believe in so many lies that even the smallest thing becomes a big demon that makes us suffer. Usually it's just a judgment, and mainly it's a self-judgment. Poor me. Look what happened to me when I was 9 years old. Look what happened to me last night. Well, whatever happened in your past is not truth anymore. It could be the most horrible thing, but right now it's not truth. Because right now is the only truth you live in. Whatever happened in your past is in the virtual reality. And whatever happened to your body was healed long ago. But the mind can make you suffer and live in shame for years. Humans carry our past, our history, around with us. And it's just like we're carrying a heavy corpse. For some, it's not that heavy. But for the majority of people, that corpse is very heavy. And it's not just heavy. It smells very bad. What many of us do is keep our corpse to share with the ones we love. With the powerful memory we have, we bring it to life in the present moment and relive our experiences again and again and again. Every time we remember those experiences, we punish ourselves and everybody else again and again and again. Humans are the only animals on earth who punish themselves 1,000 times or more for the same mistake, and who punish everybody else 1,000 times or more for the same mistake. How can we talk about injustice in the rest of the world when there's no justice in the world inside our own head? The entire universe is ruled by justice, but by true justice, not by the distortion of justice that we artists have created. True justice is facing what I call action-reaction. We live in a world of consequences. For every action, there's a reaction. True justice is to pay one time for every mistake we make. And how many times do we pay for every mistake? Obviously, this is not justice. Let's say that you're living with guilt and shame for a mistake that you made 10 years ago. The excuse for your suffering is, I made a terrible mistake. And you think you're still suffering for something that happened 10 years ago. But the truth is that you're suffering from something that happened 10 seconds ago. You judged yourself again for the same mistake. And of course, the big judge says, you need to be punished. It's simple action-reaction. The action is self-judgment. The reaction is self-punishment in the form of guilt and shame. All your life, you repeat the same action, hoping to have a different reaction, and it never happens. The only way to change your life is to change the action, and then the reaction will change. Can you see how you, knowledge, are hurting you, the human? You're thinking and judging with all those symbols that you learned. You're creating a story that's abusing the human. Whenever the human is abused, the normal reaction is anger, hate, jealousy, or any of the emotions that make us suffer. Our nervous system is a factory of emotions, and the emotions we experience depend on what we perceive. Well, we perceive our own judgments, our own belief system, our own voice of knowledge. And with the judge, the victim, and the belief system ruling our virtual world, the emotions we generate are fear, anger, jealousy, guilt, shame. What else can we expect to create? Love? Of course not. Though sometimes we do. The word is a force you cannot see, but you can see the manifestation of that force, the expression of the word, which is your own life. The way to measure the impeccability of your word is by your emotional reaction. Are you happy or are you suffering? If you're enjoying your dream or suffering your dream, it's because you're creating it that way. Yes, your parents, your religion, the schools, the government, the entire society helped you to create your dream. And it's true that you never had a choice. But now, you have a choice. You can create heaven or you can create hell. Remember, both are states of mind that exist within you. Do you like to be happy? Then be happy and enjoy your happiness. Do you like to suffer? Great, then why not enjoy your suffering? If you choose to create hell, good for you. Cry, have pain, make a masterpiece of art with your pain. But if you have awareness, there's no way you're going to choose hell. You're going to choose heaven. And the way to choose heaven is by being impeccable with your word. If you're impeccable with your word, how can you judge yourself? How can you blame yourself? How can you carry guilt or shame? When you're not creating all those emotions, you feel wonderful. Now you smile again, and it's completely authentic. You don't have to pretend to be a certain way. You don't try to be what you're not. Whatever you are is what you will be in that moment. In that moment, you accept yourself just the way you are. You like yourself. You enjoy being with yourself. You no longer abuse yourself by using the symbols against yourself. That's why I have to repeat that it's so important to be aware. The tyranny of the symbols is extremely powerful. In the dream of the second attention, the warrior tries to find out how the symbols took power over the human. The whole war of the warrior is against the symbols, against our own creation. And it's not because we hate the symbols. The symbols are a masterful creation. They're our art. And it's convenient for us to use all those symbols to communicate. But when we give all our power to those symbols, we become powerless and we need to be rescued. We need a savior because we don't have the power to make it on our own. Then we look outside ourselves and say, "Oh God, please save me." But it's not up to God or Jesus or Buddha or Moses or Muhammad or any master, shaman, or guru to save us. We can't blame them if they don't save us. Nobody can save us because nobody else is responsible for whatever happens in our virtual world. The priest, the minister, the rabbi, the shaman, or the guru cannot change our world. Our husband or our wife, our children or our friends cannot change it. No one else can change our world because that world only lives in our head. Many people say that Jesus died for us to save us from our sins. Well, it's a wonderful story, but Jesus doesn't make the choices in our lives. Instead of saving us, Jesus told us what to do. You need help? Okay. You need to follow the truth. You need to forgive. Love one another. He gave us all the tools, but we say, "No, I cannot forgive. I prefer to live with my emotional poison, with my pride, with my anger, and my jealousy." If we're fighting with the people we love, if we're creating a lot of resistance around us, remember, we live in a world of consequences. We have to let go of that first. We have to forgive because forgiveness is the only way to clear our emotional body of emotional poison. All of us have emotional poison because all of us have emotional wounds. It happens. Just as it's normal for our body to hurt when we have a cut or when we fall and break a bone, it's normal for the emotional body to hurt because we're alive, because we're surrounded by predators, and we are predators also. But there's no one to blame, it's just the way it is. If we blame, it's our emotional poison that makes us blame. Instead of blaming, we can take responsibility for our own healing. If you're waiting for someone to come and save you, well, you have to save yourself. You are your own savior. But there are teachers who give you tools to help you recover awareness and win your personal war. There are artists who can show you how to create a masterpiece of heaven with your art. Let's say that you're a good artist, but then a master artist comes along and says, "I like you. I want you to be my apprentice. Come, I'll teach you." The first and most important tool for you to become a master artist is be impeccable with your word. It's something so simple. You write your own story, and you don't want to write the story against yourself. Second, don't take anything personally. That will help you a lot. Most of the drama goes away if you just agree with that. Third, don't make assumptions. Don't create your own hell. Stop believing in superstitions and lies. And fourth, always do your best. Take action. Practice makes the master. Very simple. Then the moment comes when you start to see your whole creation from another point of view. You start to realize that you are the artistic creator of your life. You are the one who creates the canvas, the paint, the paintbrush, and the art. You are the one who gives meaning to every stroke on the canvas of your life. You are the one who invests all your faith in your art. And you say, "The story I'm creating is beautiful, but I don't believe it anymore. I don't believe my story or anybody else's story. I can see that it's just art." Great. That's the fifth agreement. Come back to common sense, to the truth, to the real you. Be skeptical, but learn to listen. In the dream of the second attention, you need tools to win the war and change your world. And that's what these agreements are all about. These are the tools for transforming your dream, for mastering your dream. And it's up to you what you do with these tools. These five simple agreements have the power to plant a seed of doubt in all those limiting, fear-based agreements you made your whole life. The only chance you have to unlearn the lies in your knowledge is by use of the attention. You use the attention to put your first dream together, and you use the attention to unlearn that dream. The four agreements are the tools for using your attention a second time to create your personal heaven. And the fifth agreement is the tool to win the war against the tyranny of the symbols. The four agreements are tools for your personal transformation. And the fifth agreement is the end of personal transformation and the beginning of giving yourself the greatest gift that you can give yourself, the gift of doubt. We've said that it was doubt that made us fall out of paradise. Well, coming back to paradise is once again about doubt. Doubt is the tool we use to recover our faith, to take our power back from every lie and superstition we believe in and return that power to ourselves. Of course, we can also use the power of doubt against ourselves, by doubting the truth. In the story of Adam and Eve, when we doubt that we are God, that doubt opens the door to another doubt, and then another, and another. When we doubt the truth, we start to believe in lies. Soon we believe in so many lies that we no longer see the truth, and we fall from the dream of heaven. Doubt is a great creation we made for going into hell or getting out of hell. Either way, doubt opens the door to be possessed by symbols, or doubt closes the door to stop the possession. If we doubt ourselves, if we doubt the truth, the whole tree of knowledge, all the mythology that controlled our attention our entire lives, starts coming back to us. The voice of knowledge starts possessing us again, and we begin to feel the anger, the jealousy, the injustice that come with all the symbols, with all the assumptions, with all that thinking. Then instead of doubting yourself, have faith in yourself. Instead of doubting the truth, doubt the lies. Be skeptical, but learn to listen. The fifth agreement opens the door to heaven, and the rest is up to you. This agreement is about being in heaven and heaven being in you. It's about letting go of your attachment to symbols, even your own name, and merging with the infinite to become authentic, to believe in yourself without a doubt, because even a little doubt can end the experience of heaven. When you have faith in yourself, you follow every instinct that you were born with. You have no doubt about what you are, and you return to common sense. You have all the power of your authenticity. You trust yourself. You trust life. You trust that everything is going to be just fine, and life becomes extremely easy. The mind no longer needs to understand everything. It doesn't need to know. You know something or you don't know it, but you don't have any doubt if you know it or not. If you don't know, you accept that you don't know. You're not going to make it up. When you're completely authentic, you speak the truth to yourself without any doubt. I like it, I don't like it, I want it, I don't want it. You don't have to do what you don't like to do. You enjoy your life doing exactly what you like to do. We make life difficult when we try to sacrifice ourselves for somebody else. Surely you're not here to sacrifice yourself for anybody. You're not here to satisfy other people's opinions or points of view. In the dream of the second attention, one of the first challenges is the fear of being yourself, your real self. If you have the courage to face this challenge, you find out that all the reasons you were afraid don't even exist. Then you find out that it's much easier to be yourself than to try to be what you're not. The whole dream of hell makes you tired because it takes energy to uphold an image, to wear a social mask. You're tired of faking it. You're tired of not being you. Just being authentic is the best thing you can do. When you're authentic, you can do whatever you want to do. You can believe whatever you want to believe, and that includes believing in yourself. How difficult can it be to have faith in yourself, to believe in you, instead of believing in symbols? You can put your faith in scientific theories, in so many religions, opinions, and points of view, but this is not real faith. Faith in yourself is the real faith. Real faith is to trust yourself unconditionally, because you know what you really are, and what you really are is the truth. Once you recover awareness of what you are, the war in your head is over. It's obvious that you're the one who creates all the symbols. And because it's obvious where the power of your word comes from, your word has power, and nothing can stop the power of your word. Your word becomes impeccable, and it's impeccable because you have power over the symbols instead of the symbols having power over you. Once your word is impeccable, you base every choice of your life on the truth, and you win the war against the tyrant. The words are there, ready to be used at your command, but the words only have meaning when you use them to communicate, to have a direct connection with someone. After you stop using the words, they have no meaning again. By the end of the dream of the second attention, the human form starts to break apart, and your reality changes once again. It changes because you no longer perceive the world through a rigid structure of beliefs. The war is over because your faith is not invested in lies. Even though lies still exist, you no longer believe. As you know, the truth just is. You don't have to believe the truth. You don't believe anything anymore. But you can see, and what you can see is the truth. The truth is right here. It's unique, and it's perfect. Maybe not the way you interpret it, maybe not the way you use the word to gossip about yourself or to gossip about other people, but once you see the truth, who cares what other people are dreaming? It's not important what other people around you are dreaming. What's important is your own experience, to use all the tools you have to face what you believe, to see the truth, to win your personal war. You don't need to compete with anybody. You don't need to compare yourself with anybody. You just need to be what you are, to be love, but real love, not the kind of love that possesses you and makes you believe in love, not the love that makes you become jealous and possessive of others and puts you directly in hell with all the tortures and punishments of hell, not the love that makes you sacrifice in the name of love or makes you hurt yourself and hurt others in the name of love. The symbol of love has become so distorted. Real love is what you were born with. Real love is what you are. You were born with everything you need to make it. If you face your fears today, tomorrow you'll see the dream of the second attention, the world of the warriors. But just because you win against fear today, it doesn't mean that you've won the war. No, the war isn't over. The war has just begun. You're still judging. You still have all those issues. You think it's done, and boom, your tyrant is back. Oh, yes, again and again and again. And it's not just the tyrant in you. It's the tyrant in everybody around you. And there are some that are worse than others. But even if you have been at war for many years, at least you can defend yourself. As a warrior, you may win the war or you may lose the war. But once you have awareness, you are no longer a victim. You are at war. And that's where the majority of people are right now, until the war is over. In the dream of the second attention, you begin to create your personal heaven on earth. You begin to put your faith in agreements that support life, that add to your joy, to your happiness, to your freedom. But this is just one step of your evolution. There's much more than that. The moment is coming when you master awareness, which means you master the truth. And by the way, you also master transformation. You master love, intent, or faith, because by that time, you believe in yourself. The result of this transformation is the creation of another reality that has the same frame as the first two dreams. But in this other reality, you no longer believe what you used to believe. You no longer believe the lies that you learned. You don't even believe the words that you learned. You have no doubt about what you experience, about what you are. The next dream, the dream of the third attention, is not that far away. But first you have to win the war in your head, and now you have the tools to do it. Then why not do it? Take the action, but don't try anymore. If you try, you'll die trying. And I can assure you that millions of warriors have died trying. There are very few warriors who ever win the war that's happening in the human mind. But those who win the war by using their attention a second time recreate their entire world. Chapter 11, The Dream of the Third Attention. The dream of the second attention ends when something very important happens in our lives, something called the Last Judgment. This is the very last time we judge either ourselves or anybody else. It's the day we accept ourselves just the way we are, and we accept everybody else just the way they are. When the day of our last judgment comes, the war in our head is over, and the dream of the third attention begins. And it will be the end of our world, but also the beginning of our world, because we are no longer in the dream of the warriors. We are in the upper world, or what I call the dream of the masters. The masters are former warriors. They have won their personal war, and they are at peace. The dream of the masters is a dream of truth, a dream of respect, a dream full of love and joy. It's the playground of life. It's what we are meant to live, and only awareness can take us to that place. Many religions talk about the last judgment as if it's a punishment for sinners. They describe it as the day when God comes and judges us and destroys all sinners. This isn't true. The Last Judgment is a card in the tarot, which is an ancient mythology from Egypt. When the mystery schools talk about the Last Judgment, we can hardly wait for that day, because it's the day when the dead come out of their grave, which means we resurrect. It's the day when we recover awareness and awaken from the dream of the underworld. It's the day when we're no longer afraid to be alive again. This is when we come back to our real state, our divine self, where we feel a communion of love with everything in existence. The resurrection is a wonderful concept from mystery schools all around the world. Once you have the awareness that almost everything you learn through symbols is not the truth, the only thing left is just to enjoy life, and that's the resurrection. When you give meaning to everything through symbols, your attention is dispersed on many things at once. When you take away the meaning from everything, you're in communion, and you become the whole thing to yourself. You become the only living being that exists. There's no difference between you and any star in the sky, or you and any rock in the desert. Everything in existence is part of the only living being in existence. When you experience this truth, even for a moment, the whole structure of your belief system disappears, and you're in that wonderful dream of heaven. Today can be a day just like every other day, or today can be a day of celebration, the day of your resurrection, the day that you change your world by coming back to life. It can be the day for the real you to come out of that grave of believing that you are what you think you are, and become what you really are. In the dream of the third attention, you finally have the awareness of what you are, but not with words. And because there are no words to explain what you are, you go back into peace, the place where you don't need to use words to know what you are. This is what the masters in the esoteric philosophies would reveal to their apprentices. The highest point you can reach is when you go beyond symbols and become one with life, with God. Ancient religions claimed that nobody can say the name of God, and it's absolutely true, because there is no symbol to describe God. The only way to know God is to be God. When you become God, you say, "Oh, that's why I could not learn the symbol." The truth is that we don't know the name of the one who created us. The word God is just a symbol that represents what really exists. And I resist this word because it's a symbol that has become so distorted. If we use symbols to describe God, we need to agree on the meaning of the symbols. And then, what point of view are we using? There are billions of different points of view. As an artist, I do my best to paint God with words, and it's the only thing I can offer, a picture of God from my personal point of view. Whatever I say, of course, is just a story. That's only the truth for me. And maybe this will make sense to you, and maybe it won't, but at least you'll have an idea of my personal point of view. The dream of the masters is a little difficult to explain because the real teaching is not with words. It's with the presence. If you could feel the presence of a master, you would learn much more than you can from words. Words can't express even a tiny bit of the experience. But if you use your imagination, words can take you to the place where you can have the experience for yourself. And this is my intention right now, for you to expand your awareness to the point where you can perceive what you really are, where you can feel what you really are. Instead of using words, perhaps a better way is to put you face to face with God so you can see God. And if I show you God face to face, what you're going to see is yourself. Believe it or don't believe it, but you'll see yourself because you are the manifestation of God. And if you could see what's moving your body, then you would see the real God. Look at your own hands. Move your fingers. The force that moves your fingers is what the Toltec call intent, or what I call life, the infinite, or God. Intent is the only living being that exists, and it's the force that is moving everything. You're not the fingers. You're the force that is moving them. The fingers obey you, You can give whatever explanation you want. Oh, my brain, my nerves. But if you go for the truth, the force that moves your fingers is the same force that makes you dream. It's the same force that opens a flower or moves the wind or creates a tornado or makes the stars move throughout the universe or makes electrons move around atoms. There's only one living being, and you are that being. You are that force that manifests itself in infinite ways throughout all the universes. The first manifestation of that force is light or energy, which is the same thing, and everything is created through this energy. Scientists know that everything is made of energy, and since there's only one force in the universe that creates this energy, at this point, science and religion come together, and we can understand that we are God because we are light. That is what we are. That is what everything is, in billions and billions of different frequencies or manifestations of light. And together, all the different frequencies create only one light. Intent is the force that creates the light. And we can say that light is the messenger of intent because it carries the message of life that goes everywhere. Light has all the information to create everything in existence, including any kind of life, humans, monkeys, dogs, trees, anything. All species of life on planet Earth are created from a specific ray or frequency of light that scientists call DNA. And the difference between the DNA itself may be minimal, but in the manifestation, it could be the difference between a human and a monkey, or a human and a jaguar, or a human and a tree. Light has many properties. It's alive. It's a living being. And it's extremely intelligent. It's creating all of the time. It's transforming all of the time. And it cannot be destroyed. Light is everywhere and everything is full of light. But we cannot see light unless it's reflected by matter. If we send an object into space from planet Earth, we see the object because it is reflecting light. There are no empty spaces between the stars, between the galaxies, between all the universes, which means all the universes are connected. You are a whole universe. The Earth is another universe. The Sun and all the planets around the Sun are another universe. All the solar systems together create another universe, and we can keep going and going until we see only one living being made by billions and billions of different living beings. Every living being is protected by the force that we call soul. The soul is the force that puts an entire universe together and recognizes the totality of that being. The soul makes matter impenetrable, which means it creates what looks like a division between beings. The soul gives shape to everything. Without this force, there would be no difference between you and a flower or a fish or a bird. Your soul was born at the moment of your conception, and it recognizes every element of itself, every molecule, every cell, every organ of your being. Your soul recognizes everything that belongs to your universe, and it rejects everything that doesn't belong to it. In the dream of the third attention, you're aware that your body is a whole universe made by billions of living beings, made by atoms, made by molecules, made by cells, made by tissues, made by organs, made by systems, until the whole universe is one. And from the point of view of the mind, it looks like there's only one point of view, the one behind your eyes. But if you go deep into awareness, you find that every atom in your body has a personal point of view, because every atom is alive. Every atom is an entire universe. It's nothing but a miniature solar system with stars and planets. What every universe has in common is that each one of them is alive with the total power of the infinite. You, that force, are alive. You are total power. You are truth. You are real. Everything else, including everything you know through symbols, is not truth. It's not real. It's an illusion, and it's beautiful. Light is not just intelligent. It has memory. It creates an image of itself. It creates the whole world of illusions that becomes your mind, the way you dream. Your dreams are not matter. They are a reflection of matter, and that reflection exists in the matter that we call the brain. The brain is nothing but a mirror. As we said before, if you look inside a mirror, you are seeing your own mind, your own dream. The first time you open your eyes, you start to perceive light, and light becomes your teacher. Light projects information into your eyes that you don't understand, but you were made to perceive light, to become one with light, because light is your other half. And because you are light, you are always creating, always transforming, and always evolving. Light goes directly into your brain and rearranges your brain in order to modify you, virtual reality, to make you a better reflection of itself. When light is modifying your brain, the brain by itself is modifying God's factory, the DNA, for the next possible human being that can come from you. And just as your body has many different organs, brain, heart, lungs, liver, stomach, skin, that all together create you, a totality, every organ in your body is made by different kinds of cells that create that organ. Do the cells know that together all of the cells are only one living being, which means you? Do we humans know that together all of the humans are only one living being, which means humanity? You are surrounded by billions of humans. Just like you, they were programmed to be human. Male or female, you recognize them. You know they are humans like you. You know. But perhaps what you don't know is that we humans are an organ of the beautiful planet Earth. Planet Earth is alive. It's a living being. And the entire humanity works for the planet as an organ of that living being. The forests are another organ. The atmosphere is another organ. Every species is another organ. And we all work together to create an equilibrium that is the metabolism of planet Earth. All of humanity is only one living being. And this is no longer a theory. We humans live together. We have the same kind of body. We have the same kind of mind. We have the same needs. We create all those symbols to understand one another. Male or female, victims, warriors, or masters, we're all the same. No human is better or worse than any other human. No human is better or worse than anything that exists throughout the universe. At the deepest level of our being, there's no difference between a human and a dog, or a human and a flea, or a fly, or a flower. We're the same. We come from the same place, and it doesn't matter where our story comes from. It doesn't matter if we're a Christian, a Buddhist, a Muslim, a Hindu. We come from the same place, and we're going back to the same place. The infinite creates everything in existence, and when the cycle is over, everything returns to the infinite. Of course the body dies, because the body is mortal, but you, the force, are immortal. In that force where the mind lives, the only thing that dies are the lies. In ancient Egypt it was said, if your heart is lighter than a feather when you die, then welcome to heaven. If your heart is heavier than a feather, you're not going to heaven. Lies cannot go back into power, but the truth returns to power, because the truth is the reflection of power. It's the reflection of the infinite. The question becomes, how heavy are your lies? Is your heart burdened with anger, fear, guilt, regret? In the dream of the third attention, the truth has already destroyed all the lies, and the only thing that survives is the truth, which means the real you. You are that force. You are life, which is truth. And from that point, your dream becomes heaven. Your dream becomes a beautiful masterpiece of art, a beautiful masterpiece of love. This leads you to the third mastery of the Toltec, the mastery of love. Or we can also call it the mastery of intent or faith. I prefer to call it the mastery of faith because it's a mastery for you to trust in yourself, which means realizing the power that you have, the power of intent, the power of life, the power of belief, the power of faith, the power of love. They're all the same power, of course. They're total power. In the moment when you master faith, you live your life in love, because love is what you are, and it's wonderful. In that moment, you completely accept your body, your emotions, your life, your story. You respect yourself. You respect all of the artists, all of your brothers and sisters. You respect all of creation. You love yourself unconditionally, and you are not afraid to express your love, to say, "I love you," to others. When you master faith, when you live your life in love, you see your own love being reflected in every secondary character of your story, and you love every secondary character of your story unconditionally, just as you love yourself. This changes your relationship with the rest of the humans. It makes you completely impersonal. You don't need reasons to love someone or not to love someone. You don't even choose to love, because to love is your nature. Love is coming out of you like the light from the sun. All of your nature is coming out of you just as it is, without expectations. And your love has nothing to do with words in your head. There are no stories. It's an experience that we call communion, which means to have the same frequency, the same vibration as love. This is how you used to be before you